The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
It must be May because the call-ups are really picking up this week. We've got a whole bunch of those to talk about on this week's waivers episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Prize Picks. Eric Halterman here with Ryan Boyer, here with our usual Saturday episode full of our favorite waiver pickups of the week. There's a whole bunch of call-ups we're going to get to today. It must be that time of year, but also a trade? Is it July? My calendar still says April, but I think that's not accurate either. But I'm not sure that May 4th is trade season. What's going on here?
Yeah, as usual, I have no idea what the Padres and AJ Preller are up to. We saw that news come across the wire, and it's not a surprise that Luis Arraez was traded, but anytime a major player is two-time batting champ is traded in May, it's just kind of a bizarre feeling. But, you know, given where the Marlins are, not a surprise that they're decided to sell sooner rather than later. An odd fit with the Padres. I guess he's going to DH most of the time. And kind of give an opportunity to give other guys days off. He can play some second base or first base. He's played a little bit in the outfield as well. Once Jerickson Profar turns into a pumpkin, which seems inevitable, maybe Arraez can play a little in left field. But obviously they're getting him for the bat. Arraez is not a strong defender anyway. But gave up a pretty notable package of prospects to get him, plus one. Well, I guess the reliever, the Korean reliever they got is still only like 25, but more of a, I guess, known quantity kind of. But, yeah, I don't know. As far as fantasy impact, I guess Arraez, maybe it goes up a little bit, to maybe a little bit better of a park, but not much of a difference, just a better lineup he's going to be in, better team context. But ultimately, I don't think a ton changes there. Vidal Brujan, I guess, is going to probably get the – bulk of the action at second base, and he's been so bad at the major league level. I know there was a time when he was with the Rays, we're pretty excited about his fantasy prospects. He ran a lot, always hit for a high average, showed glimpses of power sometimes, but he's really done none of that at the major league level. So, I mean, I certainly in deeper formats, NL only, he might have been rostered already, maybe, but he's more appealing there. Mixed league, I'm not really interested in him. But yeah, Luis Arraez, a May trade. AJ Preller with a late Dylan Cease trade, and now he makes the first in-season trade.
Yeah, you like to see it. I mean, it makes a ton of sense, doesn't it? These early May trades, we don't see them very often, but think about it from both teams' perspectives. If you're a team that's selling – why not sell six extra weeks of a player and get a little bit more back? Presumably you can get more in early May than you can in late July. I guess not 6 weeks, it's 10 weeks or something like that. And if you're the buying team, why not acquire, you know, an extra 10 weeks of the guy? If you're trying to win, especially also look at where these two teams are in the standings. Marlins probably didn't think of themselves as sellers, but they're already very sure by early May. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Padres, they're not doing great, but they're right in the mix for the wild card. And if they can get extra help for 5 months rather than just two, makes all the sense in the world. I'm surprised we don't see it more. I think it's very cool, and I hope we see another fun trade next week. I should mention Woo-Suk Go, the Korean reliever that you mentioned, who is involved in this trade. He was given a real major league contract, 2 years, $4.5 million by the Padres when they signed him. And then they sent him to AA. He just failed to win a job completely out of camp. Maybe we'll see what happens here. I wouldn't be too surprised if his path to at least a job is easier in Miami. And then once we're there, we'll see if he works his way towards the back of the bullpen, but not anywhere near the level where I'd be going out and picking him up and hoping that he immediately becomes the team's closer or something like that, because he, again, didn't even make the major league roster in San Diego.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to remember in my head the last time we saw a trade at this time of the year. I feel like the Willy Adames trade to the Brewers was like late May or something like that, maybe early June. That's the last like notable early season trade that I can think of off the top of my head. But yeah, it's interesting. I wonder how long they've been talking about this, because Manny Machado just is now able to play third base very recently.
Right. That's
they could have been talking for a while and saying, well, we got to make sure that his elbow is okay and plays third base for a bit. And once he's in the clear there, then we can pull the trigger on this. It kind of makes you think they might have been talking for a while. I feel like Peter Bendix is going to be a wheeling and dealing type president of baseball ops with the Marlins. I think he wants to kind of start from scratch there.
Yeah, sure. Seems it, if you're willing to deal at this time of the season. And like you mentioned, Manny Machado was the everyday DH for the team's first 24 games. But since then, it's almost a new DH every single day, rotating through a few different players, mostly Jerks and Profar, Graham Pauly, and some Manny Machado. But that could very easily just be the spot for Luis Arias for every game from here on forward. Or maybe he'll occasionally spell Jake Cronenworth at first or something like that. Elsewhere in the headlines, we've got an unfortunate injury for Trey Turner, a strained hamstring. It's going to keep him out at least 6 weeks, it looks like. The quote was that a return sooner than that would be a win. So I guess we can say, let's say it's at least 6 weeks in that case. Tough one for the Phillies, because Turner was playing quite well. Seems like probably we'll see some more Edmundo Sosa at shortstop. That's the team's plan today. But we could also see Bryson Stott moving back to short, and maybe a little bit more Whit Merrifield at second base. I think that would make some sense. I didn't throw Whit Merrifield on today's outline, though, because I feel like he's most likely owned in the deeper leagues and in the shallower leagues. I'm not sure there's enough left in Whit Merrifield's bat to really even have enough appeal in the shallower format, even if he does become the primary second baseman. Or am I a little bit too pessimistic there?
Yeah, I'm not sure how much mixed league value he would ultimately have, even if he's getting those everyday reps, which seems to be very much in question. I feel like the Phillies, Stott came up as a shortstop in the minors mostly, so he's capable there, but they moved away from that pretty quickly. I think he's pretty much viewed as a second base only at this point. I suspect they're going to put Edmundo Sosa there pretty much every day. Still got a solid glove. Don't know that there's much fantasy appeal there. He had a stretch, was it last year, maybe 2 years ago, where he was – looks like he might be fantasy relevant there for a bit, but then he kind of ultimately remembered that he was Edmundo Sosa. So not really an appealing fantasy option there. And, yeah, bummer on Trey Turner, because obviously It's an early round pick, yet another early round pick that's going to be sidelined for quite a while, 6+ weeks, they're saying.
Blame the pitch clock? I don't think we can do that for this one. Blame the pitch clock? Yeah. We'll find someone to do that. Yeah. Just quick on Edmundo Sosa for his career in 852 plate appearances. So call that about a season and a half. 19 homers, 15 steals, hitting .253. So we're talking about, you know, maybe a 10-10 season if he was an everyday player. Not much fantasy appeal there. I wouldn't be surprised if what the Phillies do is play Sosa at short and Stott at second when they have some of their more ground ball oriented arms on the mound. Mm-hmm. For example, today it is Ranger Suarez. So you'd want to get Edmundo Sosa at short and then maybe go with Stott and Merrifield with other pitchers on the mound, something like that. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Phillies rotation, this is a Spencer Turnbull rotation situation. I guess this now also involves Taiwan Walker and maybe Christopher Sanchez. Turnbull, of course, is the breakout starter of the year so far in a lot of ways. Really surprisingly effective April after not doing much to this point in his career, showing occasional flashes as a decent back-end guy. Turnbull was always going to move out of the rotation at some point, though, because he's coming off Tommy John surgery, only threw 31 innings last year. He's not going to start for 6 months. But he's pitched so well that the Phillies have kept trying to find ways to keep him in the rotation. Now it seems like the plan is he's going to piggyback somebody. It might be Taiwan Walker, who probably is the Phillies' sixth best starter. It might be Christopher Sanchez to get a little lefty-righty thing going on. Sanchez maybe the Phillies' fifth best starter or something like that. But then there's also talk that Sanchez is available out of the bullpen today, and if he's needed, then it's going to be Turnbull in the rotation. So one to monitor here, and I guess don't drop Turnbull yet until we fully understand what's going on.
Yeah, I think the biggest fantasy impact of this news is with Christopher Sanchez. Like I'm still, he's been hit or miss so far. He had like 1-10 strikeout game. He's missed about a bat per inning, or not a bat per inning. He's got a strikeout per inning-ish. He's had some clunkers mixed in there. Obviously, kind of an out-of-nowhere breakout for him a bit last year. Was never really much of a top prospect, and he's like 27 already. Suddenly figured out his control last year, it seemed, but he's kind of regressed in that regard. Still really intrigued by him, but, I mean, that's – could really impact, obviously, his fantasy value if he's – they're talking about it depends on what the matchup is going to be, whether Sanchez would get the start and someone would come in relief. And either way, it's they're probably not going to go more than 3-4 innings probably. And that's – you know, Sanchez is not – we don't worry too much about the potential workload concerns this year, but he might want to have his innings monitored a little bit. So – maybe that's the excuse that they're looking at and is including him as part of a piggyback. I mean, they really just need to not put Taiwan Walker in the rotation, frankly. But I get it. You know, Turnbull, I still have a little hard time believing what we've seen so far. Just, you know, since the no-hitter, he really fell off the face of the earth, both from a performance and injury perspective.
Yeah, there is the sweeper this year, though, yeah, which is enough
Caleb Cotham is he's a good young pitching coach. I think he could be figuring out a way to get the most out of him. So he's certainly way more intriguing than he was a month ago. But it, like you said, it's going to be difficult to start him for, you know, 6 months. I don't see how they're gonna do that. Even if he has his inning doesn't have his innings like super curtailed, I mean, he's just likely to wear down at some point. But yeah, my biggest takeaway is with Christopher Sanchez, because because I'm invested in him in multiple leagues. So selfishly, I did not like seeing that news, but we'll see what Rob Thompson ultimately does.
Yeah, there's a dynamic going on with Sanchez where he's actually throwing harder this season, but he's lost some control as a result. And I believe he alluded to that fact in the spring. And there's some thought that maybe he'll just revert that change. And if he goes back to, you know, losing a tick again and getting his control back, maybe he'll be totally fine. But I don't think we can count on that definitely happening. I wouldn't be dropping either Sanchez or Turnbull until we figure out exactly what's going on. And hey, if one of them pitches second behind the other consistently for the next month or so, that's totally fine from a fantasy perspective. You'll get a few fewer innings, but you're still getting those shots at a win. So this is definitely a situation to monitor for sure. I'm with you on wishing that Taijuan Walker wasn't there, but he's a guy who gets you to the postseason and then is left off your postseason roster. And I think that's basically what his role is, just soak up some innings. I think if the playoffs were today, Turnbull and Sanchez are there ahead of him. A couple other injuries to wrap up real quick before we get to the pickups. We've got Byron Buxton heading to the injury list with knee inflammation. There's some talk that this is a possible minimum length stint, but there's also some talk that this is Byron Buxton we're talking about. So I don't know if optimism is called for in any situation, although you could again say that this is Byron Buxton. So anytime that there's the slightest bit of anything, they're going to shut him down for 10 days and we'll be fine. But Buxton wasn't even playing that well. So if you're holding on to Buxton, are you going to hold on to him through his first injury of the year and hope that the team is right about it being a very brief stay?
In deeper leagues, yes. I'm okay with cutting him loose in a shallower league. If you're in like a three outfielder league, I think five outfielders, you have to hang on to him for now. Yeah, it's the same knee that he's had surgery on twice. They are talking like this is a potentially minor setback, but as you mentioned, we can't trust that with Byron Buxton, and he's already was not playing very well. Willie Castro, probably going to see him quite a bit in center field. Austin Martin they brought up, he can play some center field. Which I guess if Willie Castro plays more in the outfield, maybe Jose Miranda gets more action at third base and plays more against righties. He's hit decently or in the early going. I think he's got a intriguing bat still. So that's more deeper league stuff. But, yeah, Buxton, I don't know. I think – what do you think? I'm probably holding still deeper leagues, shallower leagues. I think he's fine to cut loose.
Yeah, given that they said potentially the minimum, I think we can wait at least 1 week. I think this time next week we'll know whether or not the minimum is in play. And if it isn't, then I think we're worried that it's, you know, a pretty long-term thing that's going to linger for a long time. So I would lean towards holding at least 1 week in those deeper leagues. We've got a comment here in the chat saying that Byron Buxton and Royce Lewis should fight. Definitely not. I think that would be instantly career-ending for both of them. Got to keep those guys as far away from any physical contact as possible. One last injury here. Nathan Eovaldi to the injury list with a groin strain. Don't yet have an exact sense of how long that one's going to be, but this seems to potentially clear the path for Jack Leiter, who we will probably touch on later in the budget buys section. I don't think either of us thought too hard about putting Jack Leiter as one of our biggest buys of the week, did we?
Yeah, that first start was rough. But yeah, the upside certainly is still there with Jack Leiter. They're not going to bring Jacob deGrom back early to fill this spot.
How far away is he?
Yeah, multiple months. Yeah. Max Scherzer is getting closer, so maybe he'll beat Eovaldi back to the rotation. But yeah, Leiter, I think I'm not super confident that he's going to have your standard mixed league value, but he's got enough upside and he was pitching good enough in the minors that it's a kind of stick him on the back end of your roster and see what happens kind of situation. I probably wouldn't throw him back out there and to start him right away if you can have other viable alternatives. But like you mentioned, we're gonna talk about him a little bit later, so we don't want to go too deep into it now.
Yep. I also want to quickly mention from the comments here, doesn't George Kirby have a knee thing too? Yes. We're not really sure what it is. Knee thing is a good way to describe it for now. The manager said he's dealing with some sort of knee issue. He has been dealing with it for some time, it seems like. He's been able to pitch through it, but it also was bad enough that it forced him to exit his previous start, although exit after 88 pitches and six innings doesn't even count as an early exit these days. So probably not actionable for fantasy purposes, but could develop into something actionable soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think all we can do is just kind of keep an eye on it. But thank you, Dr. Doom, for bringing that up. We should have mentioned it, but keep an eye on that. And as you mentioned, he's been pitching through it and been a little hit or miss in the early going, but his last couple starts have been pretty good. So hopefully he'll shake it off and be able to take his next turn.
Dr. Doom warning us about injuries in the comments is a little bit ominous, but let's take a quick break to process that while I give you this message from Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. And hey, we've got a RotoWire Picks tool which can help you make your picks there. For example, I can go over there and I can look at just tonight's game between the Dodgers and Atlanta. And this is telling me that Will Smith going more than 1.5 hits plus runs plus RBI. That's an interesting one. Also saying under or less on the fantasy score here for Tyler Glasnow. I think that one probably makes sense against Atlanta. Whole bunch of insights even on this just one game alone on the RotoWire Picks tool. So give that a check. With quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back, everybody, to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, Saturday Waivers Edition. Eric Holterman and Ryan Boyer here, starting, as always, with our priority waiver pickups of the week. And this is the section this week where we're going to have a whole bunch of exciting players who just got called up, starting with, take it away, Ryan.
Yeah, they say to never trust the guy with two first names, but Christian Scott is pretty intriguing. I don't know if we can trust him yet, but I definitely like the idea of picking him up and finding out. Major league debut coming today versus Tampa Bay at Tampa Bay. Had a breakout in 2023, arguably even better here so far in the minors in 2024. 3.20 ERA, 0.71 WHIP, 36-6 strikeout to walk rate in 25 in the third innings. Pretty good first matchup against a Rays team that's not swinging the bats very well. His second start tentatively lines up versus Atlanta, so that's going to be a bigger test, certainly. Third start looks like Miami, so two out of the first three pretty good matchups. Should have an opportunity to stick. The manager, Carlos Mendoza, didn't want to commit beyond this start, which you wouldn't really expect him to, the guy making his major league debut. Sounds like they'll go to a six-man rotation for a little bit because I guess Adrian Hauser has to have a spot in the rotation. They also have Tyler McGill that should be coming back soon, so they'll have a decision to make there. Christian Scott, he was kind of a pop-up prospect last year, I feel like. And like I said, has been arguably even better. He was good, looked good in spring training as well. The stuff looks really good. He gives up a lot of fly balls. Home runs could potentially be a concern, but in a pretty pitcher-friendly home park, so that helps. Like I mentioned, I think he's certainly worth picking up in virtually any format. Like that second start versus Atlanta, depending on how he looks Saturday, might shy away from using him there, but he's a guy with the upside of someone who can, you know, should be in the back end of your roster, and you just kind of see how it's going to go.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Christian Scott. I mean, among the pitching prospects, he's one of the most exciting ones that's going to come up this year. Maybe the most exciting one that you can actually bid on, because you're not going to be able to bid on Paul Skenes. He's rostered in basically every league. And so I think that means Scott's going to go for huge money. And I think he probably should, right? If you think about the players that you're holding on to your fab budget for, you figure maybe you're going to win one closer for 15 to 20%, and maybe you're going to go for one or two big rookies for a similar number. He's one of them. I think if you've got the money and you've got need at pitching, and what fantasy team couldn't use another pitcher, this is what a very good pitching prospect looks like. Like you mentioned, some issues with fly balls. I wonder a little bit about the specter of Brandon Pfaadt, who had excellent strikeout and walk numbers in the minors, but also had a home run problem, and that did manifest itself in the big leagues. I was waiting to see whether any prospect people or pitch shape people would make that comparison, and I did see Lance Brozdowski, who does excellent pitch breakdowns on both the Cubs pregame and all over Twitter. He did mention Brandon Pfaadt's name at one point. So that's the only yellow flag here, maybe, with Christian Scott, but I'm very excited about him. I would want to be going pretty heavily on him, and I think he's going to cost you over 15% of your budget, probably even over 20%, unless he really throws a dud tonight, don't you think?
Yeah, it's kind of odd, I guess. I don't know how to describe it. How much it will depend on probably tonight's start. Like, it could sway that bidding quite a bit. I think if you are really a believer in Christian Scott, you probably want him to pitch not so great tonight, and he'll go a little cheaper tomorrow. But yeah, I'm interested to see how he does. I think 15%+ is probably in the right range, though.
And we got one question on him here. How would you rank Carlos Rodon, Jack Flaherty, and Christian Scott? Would you be dropping either Rodon or Flaherty? I don't think I'd consider dropping Flaherty because he's really having quite an interesting season so far. And Carlos Rodon kind of isn't. So if he's your worst pitcher, if you're in a league of that depth and you want Christian Scott, I'd consider it. I don't think that Rodon's about to have a breakout back into his peak form. And so if he's just a guy, I think Scott could really be something, no?
I don't think I'd be ready to drop Rodon yet for Scott. Maybe if he is, like, definitely the worst pitcher on your roster, and it's, you know, it maybe a shallower league, and you can, you know, take the chance on the upside of a guy like Scott. But I still think there might be something there with Rodon. I feel like he's shown enough that he could still be not the dominant Rodon that we've seen at times the last couple of years, but I would be hesitant generally in making that move right now.
All right, fair enough. So we got a split answer there. Every chance Rodon easily out-earns Scott the rest of the way. Certainly, I'm just a little bit biased towards wanting to take a shot on a guy like Scott. And I'm not all that biased towards wanting to take a shot on a guy like John Means, but I did throw him on here because he's getting ready to make his season debut. Has had some very strong years in the not-too-distant past, but just working his way back from forearm issues. When did they pop up originally? It was mid-February, right? It was right before camp even started. He just came into camp a little bit behind as he worked his way back from a flare-up from last October, really. I'm not sure if there was an incident in February or if it was just he was always behind.
Yeah, I don't know if it was – if they ever said officially if it was lingering from the October thing or if it was a brand-new different injury. But either way, obviously he's had his arm issues, multiple arm issues.
Right, and this is after, of course – Tommy John taking out a season recently. And even at his best, John Means was not a high strikeout guy at all. His strikeout rate in 2021 was just shy of 23%, but he always has great control. And if he can get close to a league average strikeout rate and keep that walk rate down around 5%, which is where his career mark is, we haven't really gotten to see John Means in the new large version of Camden Yards. And as a lefty, you figure there's going to be a bunch of righties in the lineup against him who are just going to hit a ton of deep flyouts to left field. That's John Means' game. So even if I'm not psyched about him as this high strikeout power arm, as long as he's going to stick in the rotation and pitch well enough at a pitcher's park for a good team, I think you need John Means even in the shallower leagues. I wouldn't go too high on him, but 3-5% is probably fine. And if he's out there in one of your deeper leagues still, which he might be, you probably have to go over 10%. And I think I probably would, even if he's not an exciting option.
Yeah, more of a floor guy than a ceiling guy. But that's as you mentioned, he came back late last year, but gets to pitch a full season-ish in that park for the first time. So it does seem like a really good fit. We did see him, the velocity spike a couple of years ago, and he looked like he might start missing more bats, but that kind of ticked back. So I'm certainly not expecting that. Kind of a bizarre rehab assignment. Like, he was really terrible, and then his last rehab start, he was awesome, or at least the line was awesome. I didn't read specific scouting reports on how he looked, but I mean, I think he went 7 shutout innings, 8 strikeouts, only gave up like 1 hit. So that's maybe he can carry that momentum into his first start. But as you mentioned, it's more of a floor play than a ceiling play. He's probably not going to miss a ton of bats, but he should be rostered. I think Hayden Wesneski, worth rostering in deeper leagues as well, maybe some shallower leagues. 6 1/3 scoreless innings versus the Brewers yesterday. 8 strikeouts, just 3 hits and 2 walks. I watched that start, and I feel like if he very easily could have gone deeper into the game had he been a little bit more stretched out. They've used him a couple times in relief. His pitch count still wasn't that high, but the Brewers really didn't have much of a chance against him. And at that Friday afternoon game at Wrigley, 16 2/3 innings so far in 2024, 0.54 ERA, 0.72 whip, 14-3 strikeout to walk rate. Also has been pitching well at AAA with a 2.53 ERA. Wesneski had some buzz going into last season after that strong finish to 2022. Was missing a lot of bats at the tail end of 2022. Came over in a trade from the Yankees. Really disappointed, though, last year. Wound up spending a chunk of the year in the minors, a chunk of the year in the bullpen. Mostly a two-pitch pitcher. He's had some issues with left-handed batters, but that sweeper again, really nasty pitch. He's missing bats at like a 40% rate with that pitch. Also throws a four seamer. Like I said, mostly a two pitch pitcher. Those guys can fall on their face pretty quickly. But I think Wisniewski is interesting enough, and he's not guaranteed a rotation spot over the long haul, but I mean, they have Kyle Hendricks on the way back, but are they going to throw Hendricks back into the rotation? And I guess they will, given his past, but can't trust him certainly at this point. I think Wisniewski is intriguing enough to be worth a bid, and you probably aren't going to have to spend a whole lot. 2% maybe, I think probably would be enough.
Yeah, the only issue with Wisniewski is you mentioned Hendricks coming back, also Justin Steele coming back Monday. Yeah. So we're just not exactly sure what the Cubs are going to do. Is Wisniewski going to keep a job ahead of Ben Brown? Ben Brown's been maybe more interesting than straight up good so far this year, but he hasn't been bad, and he got the chance before Wisniewski. So you could see the Cubs saying, sorry, Hayden, it's Ben Brown's job still. So that does keep the excitement somewhat muted. But I do like a guy who was interesting, you know, just over a year ago. Sometimes short-term memory loss can actually be useful in fantasy when we remember, hey, wait a second, we used to like this guy, didn't we? Why was that? And a lot of those factors can still be there. So if Wisniewski does keep around, if he does keep that job, I'm pretty interested. I threw on Trevor McGill because it's now become a tradition to talk about Trevor McGill in every single waivers podcast. He's got the last two saves for the Brewers now. So we have the weekly discussion of how close to being an actual closer is he. And, you know, it was between Trevor McGill and Joel Piamps and Abner Uribe heading into the year. Uribe looked like the guy right away. Now he is suspended and in the minors. When he comes back up, he's going to have to serve a 6-game suspension for his role in that brawl. And Joel Piamps, if you're interested in Piamps, it was mostly, I think, because he looked like he was ahead of the others in the pecking order because he got some saves last year. I think we're beyond the point where that really matters, right? And we have to look at how they're actually being used. And how they're actually being used, at least right now, is McGill is the top guy. So I think if you're at a place where you can go get a reliever who's not 100% a closer, but who's sort of like one, I like Trevor McGill's skills, and I like the fact that he's getting saves. So I think we're back over here. But I'm not going high with my recommended bid because next week I'll be recommending Joel Piamps probably. So let's just say 2 or 3 maybe for McGill. I'm not going to bid on him like he's now the closer, but I think he kind of might be sort of one for a few weeks.
Yeah, I think it could just depend a lot on how desperate you are for saves. If you're pretty desperate, then you're going to have to go more than that, I think. But like you mentioned, if you had asked me a week ago at this time, I probably would have leaned Piamps still as the favorite. But their usage since then certainly points to McGill. As you mentioned, Uribe back in the minors, and he was pitching pretty poorly before being sent back down, obviously, because he got sent back to the minors. But yeah, you might have to reach double-digit bid-ish if you're that desperate for saves, but you know, just kind of depends on what your situation is. Sticking with the Brewers, we're going to go over to the hitter side. Tyler Black was promoted this week. Early on, 3-for-10, a couple doubles. He's been batting third and fourth for the Brewers so far. A 918 OPS with 5 home runs and 3 stolen bases at AAA. 2023 at a 930. OPS, 18 home runs, 55 stolen bases between AA and AAA. He's an atypical first baseman, 5'10 guy with not a whole lot of power. You know, I mentioned the 18 home runs last year, but scouts seem to think of him as maybe he can squeak into the double digits kind of guy, probably not a 20 homer bat. Miller Park might help out a little bit. Sorry, American Family Field. But I think where he really is interesting is he's got great plate discipline, 16% walk rate, just a 17.8% strikeout rate in the minors. Stolen base upside is legitimate. He's got really good speed. Also double eligible right now at second base and third base. He should pick up first base eligibility soon. That's certainly handy to have. The Brewers are, you know, there's clear openings at both first and third base for them. And potentially the designated hitter spot if they want to use Rhys Hoskins more at first base. But Tyler Black certainly looks like he could stick around for the long haul. And it depends on what your needs are, I guess. But like I mentioned, kind of an atypical guy for a first baseman. He's not going to offer a bunch of power, but potentially a lot of stolen bases. They've been sticking him in the middle of that batting order so far. And, you know, I think he's probably going to take at least 8 to 10 or so percent. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds right, especially given that Black was getting some attention, not maybe a ton of buzz, but definitely some attention in spring training when it looked like he had at least a chance to break camp with the team. People saw his speed and definitely wanted a piece of that if he was going to be on the opening day roster. So that's going to feed right into some higher bids this weekend. And the fact that he's playing and playing right in the middle of that lineup means the Brewers certainly seem like they intend to keep him around if he at all looks like he belongs. Moving on to my next guy here, does not yet look like he belongs. That's Jordan Beck. He is an outfielder for the Rockies, and through his first 5 major league games, he's running a 61% strikeout rate. He's hitting 167, 167, 167. So that's not great, but he plays for the Rockies, and he's not a non-prospect either. Beck wouldn't have been a huge prospect if he played elsewhere, but he's a player who's supposed to have a big league career. He's only 23, and interestingly, the Rockies, who are known for slow playing their prospects, not giving them playing time once they eventually arrived, they're not doing that with Beck. The fact that he's here at age 23 and he's played every single game since he was called up, that could change if his strikeout rates remains above 60%. Of course, maybe he won't continue to play every game next week. But if you see the way he's being used, that's hugely important. 5 straight starts all down in the bottom of the order. I think he hit it as high as 6th, but mostly 8th. He's a guy who should have some decent power, some strikeout issues, not non-zero speed, but not big speed. This isn't a player that you'd get hugely excited about, but he's playing at Coors, and I believe that they're about to have a week full of home games as well for the Rockies. So I think you want in on Jordan Beck just in case this works out. The Rockies seem pretty invested in him. So if you can get a player who's playing every day at Coors Field, that's something. So I would go. I don't think you need to go as much because of his awful first week, yeah. But I still think you might need to go 4, 5, 6%, you think?
Yeah, I would be hesitant to go maybe even that much, but
okay.
kind of a long line of good, not great Rockies outfield prospects that have come up in the last couple of years. I mean, Sean Bouchard is still around. Hunter Goodman is on that list. Really the only one that's worked out so far is Nolan Jones, and he's been, of course, awful and now hurt, which is why Jordan Beck is playing left field. But Beck could also slide over to right field when Jones returns if he hits. And as you mentioned, he's got lots of raw power. He's a big dude, but runs pretty well for a guy that size. So he's, like you mentioned, not a complete zero in the stolen base category, probably. We don't know what to expect. Odds are probably high that he's not going to be much. But as you mentioned, he's a guy with power who plays at Coors Field. So that alone makes him pretty interesting. A guy who was not on my radar at all before the season, but Tyler Nevin has been bouncing around on waivers from team to team, it seems like. He's played on, gone to 4 or 5 different organizations in the last year. Kind of settled in with the A's at this point. He's been an everyday guy. He's batted 2nd in their lineup. Last 8 games, he has an 11-24 OPS with 4 home runs. Ranks in the 76th percentile in sweet spot rate, the 74th percentile in expected ISO. Triple eligible. Believe first base, third base, and outfield he should be. eligible. Obviously, the context isn't great. Bad team, bad park to hit in. And he was a okay-ish prospect at some point. He's former first-round pick. Like I said, he's bounced around on waivers, though. And, you know, you can read that one way that teams were willing to give up on him, but also he's at least piqued the interest of multiple teams as well. Phil Nevin's little boy, you know, he's doesn't have like huge raw power or anything, but I mentioned the sweet spot rate, the expected ISO number is pretty good. Not a great team context, but multi-position eligibility. How much is it going to take to land him? Probably still take much, even though he's off to a nice start. I'm probably in that same range as you mentioned for Jordan Beck, maybe to the 3 to 5 or so.
Yeah, that seems fair. You got to like a guy who's got the chance to play all the time, and nobody's going to stop anybody from playing in Oakland. They even sent Estuary Ruiz to the minors to get this guy originally, right? That was why Ruiz was sent down on like day 4 of the regular season, was because the A's picked up Tyler Nevin. Nothing too exciting in his underlying numbers, but it's hitting fine. And if he's hitting fine and going to play quite a bit, even if the park and lineup contexts are terrible, I would not be dropping Michael Bush for him, though, in response to this question here. I would not be dropping Michael Bush for Nevin or for Willy Castro, who we mentioned briefly earlier as somebody who might take advantage of a bit more playing time in the absence of Byron Buxton. Like the player, but Michael Bush has shown enough. I like him more than both of these guys, and more than I like my next player, Joey Loperfido. Back to the call-ups. Loperfido has been getting attention since the minor league season started, really, because he had 13 homers in 25 games at the AAA level, really broke out this season in his age 25 season at AAA. And as a prospect who was never anything close to an elite one, but he can hit the ball really hard, and he might be able to hit it hard enough to make up for some very real contact concerns. So far in his first 3 games, he's running a 45% strikeout rate, so not doing anything to minimize those contact concerns. But hey, that's a whole lot better than Jordan Beck, so I guess we can't be too down on him there. Joey Loperfido, if he keeps this job, which he might, it's not as if Jose Abreu did anything to say that he should be back and playing regularly. And actually, Loperfido is not playing over at first base just yet. He's playing in the outfield with Chaz McCormick on the injured list. But Loperfido, as a cornerback who could play some left, could play some first base, I'm not at all confident that he's going to stick around and that he's going to hit for enough power to make up for the strikeout concerns. But the potential of playing quite a bit in a lineup this good and with the power that he's shown so far, that's pretty enticing. And you're going to have to put in a real bid for him, even with that downside. And I think that bid's going to have to be at least the 6 to 8% range, right?
Yeah, I think so. My excitement was muted a bit when I heard James Anderson talking about him. I think he might have answered a question in a chat or something. I don't want to put words in James's mouth, but the read I got is that he would be surprised if he's able to make enough contact to be a big difference maker, maybe more of a quad A type player. But gosh, those numbers in the minors, he's certainly showing a lot of power. And he's, as you mentioned, still 25. So maybe there's more there than James believes, or some other people believe that he could, you know, have issues with those with contact, but certainly plenty of power in the path. The playing time is there with Chaz McCormick-Kurt and Jose Abreu down at Arizona Complex League, I guess.
Not the typical place you send a player, but I guess send it back. It was basically just back to spring training, right? So it makes some
sense. Yeah. Basically extended spring training. I'm going to go with Josh Rojas as my next waiver wire recommendation. Been the regular leadoff man against righties since J.P. Crawford went down. Off to a great start this season. 338, 420, 535. Almost as many walks as strikeouts. He's got 3 home runs and 2 stolen bases over his last 13 games. 89th percentile in an expected WOBA, 92nd percentile and chase rate, 94th percentile and sweet spot. Dual eligible, second base and third base. The upside with Josh Rojas is certainly not high. He's a atypical third baseman because he really doesn't have a whole lot of power. I think he probably has more potential to help out in the speed department, but he kind of is like Crawford a little bit in that he's going to be hitting leadoff and he can draw some walks and should score some runs. And the StatCast numbers are don't like jump off the page in certain areas, but he's really good in that sweet spot rate, as I mentioned. It's kind of an unexciting pick, but while he's batting leadoff, it should be at least for another week or two, it sounds like. I think he's certainly, if you have a need at second or third base, he's worth scooping up. Probably not going to take a whole lot to get him. Two or three, I think, is probably all he'll need.
Yep, agreed, but I think I would want him. He's doing a lot of things well. He's always been, I think, not quite good enough to be interesting to me. Some people have liked him, but he has speed, but it wasn't great speed. Topped out at 23 steals, and the bat just wasn't great in either. You know, it never hit for a high average, just in the 260s with not much power. But this year, had a strikeout rate down below 15%, and he's hitting more fly balls than ever, which might get him closer to fringe average power. And that would make the whole profile a whole lot more interesting. If he does everything kind of well with a bit of speed, is a lot more interesting than nothing really all that well with a bit of speed. So we'll see where this one goes. Final priority hitter here for these shallower leagues would be the only place you're probably going to get this guy is Brett Beatty, who is coming off a recent two-homer game, which certainly has boosted his stats. But the main thing that he's done this year is made way more contact. Last year, he had a 28% strikeout rate. This year, that's down to 18%. And he's actually had much weaker contact as a result, which isn't necessarily good. But if he's coming off a two-homer game, I'm taking that as a sign of some of that weak contact was maybe just an April thing, and he's coming out of that as we head into the season. Brett Beatty was supposed to be pretty good, too, before his real disaster of a year last year, where he had a 598 OPS. So when a guy has real prospect pedigree, I'm more likely to jump at an interesting month. And I think this is an interesting month for Beatty. If he's making more contact with less power, but then we start to see some signs that the power will come too, that's good enough for me. And if I have a need at the corner spot, I'd be going out to get Brett Beatty, even in a shallower league, but I wouldn't go too far on him, probably only 2-4%.
Wanted to address this question because I think Brian Wu is worth bringing up. If he's available in your league, I think he's definitely worth picking up. Pitched really well on his rehab assignment. I don't know if they've officially said that he's what day he's coming up, but it seems like early to mid week next week. But yeah, I'm a Brian Wu fan. Misses bats, could have some issues with left-handers. That was his big problem last year, but I think there's definitely enough upside there to make a pretty healthy fab bid. Certainly the Mariners deserve the benefit of the doubt too, given what they've done with their pitching staff. What do you think? At least probably 8 or 10 for Brian Wu. Where are you at with him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy people really quite liked, so you may even have to go more than that. I guess coming off an injury, there might be some people a little bit worried, but it was only ever inflammation, which isn't as bad as a strain. So I think we're ready for Brian Wu to be unleashed. And if he was going to be quite interesting during the draft in your league, definitely you could have to put quite a decent amount of money down to go get him. Let's cut to a quick break here with this message from Vivid Seats. And when we come back, we've got our budget pitchers and budget hitters. But first, finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win, and here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill, and make progress toward your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. Welcome back to the Saturday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Eric Holtzman and Ryan Boyer here, moving on to our budget buys of the week. These are some pitchers and hitters we'd be just spending a buck on, often only looking in deeper leagues where maybe you go a little bit more depending on need. Let's start on the mound. Ryan, who is your first deep league slash budget pitcher?
Ben Lively, off to a good start with the Guardians. 2.3 ERA, 0.96 whip, 19-3 strikeout to walk rate in his first 15 2/3 innings.
Did we lose you there briefly, Ryan? I think I lost your sage advice on Ben Lively.
Am I back now?
Yeah.
Ben Lively, I don't know how much you caught, but off to a good start, particularly at 19-3 strikeout to walk rate in 15 2/3 innings. Faced the Red Sox twice, the Braves once. 5.38 ERA last year with the Reds. Not great, but 79-25 strikeout to walk rate in 88 2/3 innings. Pretty solid. Gave up 20 home runs in those 88 2/3 innings, so that's going to make anyone's ERA bloated. Should be less of an issue at Progressive Field than it was at Great American Ballpark. I mean, we're talking about a 31-year-old, something like that, who's hasn't been much of anything lately, but showing some interesting things. And I think you should trust the Guardians to a certain degree that they might be able to get the most out of this guy. And the Guardians suddenly look like they have needs in their rotation. It hasn't been as good as of a start as they've gotten off to. Hasn't really been because of their rotation to this point. So they might need Ben Lively to make a good number of starts. And at the very least, in favorable matchups, I think he's worth, you know, the usual in this section $1 bid.
Yeah, pretty interested in his underlying numbers, but also want to remember that it's Ben Lively we're talking about, who, you know, is only recently returned from Korea, where he was not necessarily a shutdown weapon over there. He did also come back here last year and have a few good starts with the Reds, and then it went downhill quickly. So that's why he's in the budget section, though. Definitely intrigued by him. I've thrown Alek Manoah on here. Begrudgingly, I think. I don't want Alek Manoah anywhere where I have to start him right away. But he is returning on Sunday, returning from the injured list. He's been technically on a rehab assignment in the minors, working his way back from shoulder inflammation. And a lot of his work in the minors wasn't very good. But he did have a 12-strikeout performance in his last tune-up. And look, even when Alek Manoah was good, I was not an Alek Manoah guy at all. So this is going to be the most lukewarm recommendation here. Look at his 2.24 ERA from 2022. That came with a 3.96 xFIP, for example, a 3.85 Sierra. So a lot of the better ERA estimators said that he was, you know, just a guy, maybe a number three starter type, even in his best season when he got some Cy Young votes because he had an elite ERA. So even if we get all the way back to peak Alek Manoah isn't as good as he looks, I don't think. That said, that wasn't very long ago, and there's a chance that he gets somewhere close to that. So anywhere where I can afford to add Alek Manoah to my bench, I want to add Alek Manoah to my bench, and I fully expect to cut him in 2 weeks. But the upside here is too high to not try to add him anyway, even if I don't think it's going to work out. Does that make sense to you, or is this a crazy way of thinking about it?
No, I mean, I think you covered it perfectly. We have no idea what to expect from him. And if you had made me guess, I would guess it's going to probably go quite poorly, like most of his rehab starts did. But Then all of a sudden, seemingly out of nowhere, he strikes out 12 in his most recent rehab start. So maybe there's something there. Stash him on your bench and find out. That's really all you can do at this point. Simeon Woods Richardson, off to a nice start with the Twins, I think is a decent budget buy. 2.45 ERA, 13-4 strikeout to walk rate, over 14 and two-thirds innings. His numbers regressed the last 2 years at AAA, but he's still only 23 years old, former top 100 prospect. Mostly this is about the fact that he's pitching pretty well right now, and he has two starts next week against a Mariners team that's not hitting well and a Blue Jays team that's not hitting well. So I think he's a viable streamer in deeper leagues. I think there's a decent chance I would cut him after that, but if you're looking for a streamer option, I think he's solid.
Yeah, a decent option there for sure. How about Jack Leiter, who we alluded to earlier, has not yet been officially confirmed that he's going to be back in the majors, but he's on schedule to take Nathan Eovaldi's spot in the rotation with Eovaldi out with a groin injury. Leiter got his debut a couple weeks ago and really was not close to good enough. And he's someone who's struggled in his way up through the minors and lost a lot of his past prospect pedigree. But, you know, even after his bad major league debut, he went back to the minors, had a couple good starts, and his overall AAA numbers this year are excellent. In 25 and a third innings, he's got a 37% strikeout rate against an 8% walk rate, a 2.84 ERA. So I think that you might be able to sneak him in for kind of cheap. And it's kind of the same logic, though, with the Alek Manoah. It's a pessimistic ad, but the upside's high enough that just in case it hits, I'd rather he be on my team than someone else. So I'm not going to get him anywhere where I need a starter this week or anything like that. But I think it might be time to go get Jack Leiter again if you can sneak him in somewhere where you have that kind of luxury.
Yeah, I would prioritize him over Manoah for what it's worth, personally.
Yeah,
but fair. They're both, I agree, fall in the same bucket that you're probably more putting him on the bench and just kind of see where things go. You don't even need to add this guy on the bench necessarily. You could add him and stick him in your IL spot. I'm going to throw out AJ Puck. He's throwing again off the mound after his shoulder, quote-unquote, injury. Was he actually injured? It was a fatigue thing. I think it was more of a injured ERA and confidence more than anything else. Disaster as a starting pitcher, but 15 saves, 78-13 strikeout to walk rate in 56 and two-thirds innings as a reliever last season. He's going to be a reliever when he comes off the IL. Shouldn't be much longer till he's back. Tanner Scott has been better the last couple weeks, but he's got a 12-14 strikeout to walk rate in 13 innings this season. I still don't have a ton of trust in Tanner Scott. The improved control last year with him really came out of nowhere, and it seems to have regressed back to where it was pre-2023 this year. I think AJ Puck might be better than him. I don't think he's going to overtake him for the closer job tomorrow or necessarily anytime soon, but I definitely think it's possible. Also possible, when we saw that the Marlins are ready to wheel and deal, they could trade Tanner Scott sooner rather than later, and then AJ Puck maybe goes back into the closer role. So in a deeper league, I'm good with him as a stash.
Yeah, they probably need Puck to have some good outings before he really pushes towards the closer, but you've got to get him now and then see where it leads. And, you know, they also probably need Tanner Scott to have some good outings before they consider trading him. Let's move on to the budget hitters to wrap things up here, starting with Vidal Brujan, who we touched on earlier, should be playing more after the Luis Arraez trade, although, to be fair, he's actually been playing quite a bit over the last week or so. It looks like he started 6 of the team's last 8 games. I think it's now 7 out of 9 because I believe he's in the lineup today as well. Vidal Brujan, somebody asked earlier if he's a must-add. Definitely not. Because, again, he's been playing and you haven't added him yet, and I don't think you've felt like you missed out on much. But I think his playing time is going to remain pretty safe. And let's just see what Vidal Brujan can do with extended playing time, right? There's a couple years ago, he was quite a good prospect, particularly quite a good fantasy prospect because of his speed. Somebody who, if he gets the playing time, is he going to take it and run with it and show that actually he is a competent major league regular? So far this year, the suggestions are that he might be. In 53 plate appearances, he's got an 824 OPS. He's hitting 298. He's only striking out 7.5% of the time. He's really made very weak contact over the course of his big league career, and that's probably going to continue. So we're really just talking about somebody who you're getting for their speed and hopefully a good batting average, which again, 7.5% strikeout rate this season. We might get quite a good batting average here. I want to take a shot at a guy who was a pretty good prospect just 3 years ago. If the playing time's there, definitely not a must add. Very likely that it doesn't work out and that he's just a barely viable fantasy option in a lot of formats, if that. But there's some upside here for sure.
Yep, multi-position eligible guy who has the potential to steal a lot of bases if he can just get on base at a reasonable clip. And like you mentioned, the playing time should be there. So deeper leagues, I'm definitely good with taking a shot on Vidal Brujan. Would have to be a very deep league for my next guy, Mickey Moniak. It's been terrible in 2024. Among 329 players with at least 50 plate appearances, he ranks 315th in weighted runs created plus. Not great, Bob. Batted ball data, also not great. He was an easy regression candidate given his terrible plate discipline coming into this year after he hit well last year, but did have a 12.6% barrel rate in 2023. He's a fly ball and a pull hitter, so he can get the most out of that, what power he has. Also has in the 90th percentile in sprint speed in 2024, so he can run. He's been a regular versus righties post Mike Trout. Had a home run and 3 RBI on Friday. This is another one of those kind of lukewarmish recommendations, but I think he should get at bats, and he did show something last year. I would refer to him as a former number one overall pick, which he is, but that was a money-saving pick. He wasn't ever really viewed as a top prospect, but is still relatively young, and he's probably going to play regularly while Trout is out. So I think Moniak showed enough last year that he's at least interesting in deeper formats.
Yeah, I was going to say that it just feels cruel to refer to Moniak as a former first overall pick at this point. I think that was a weight around his neck that's probably affected him so far in his career. Yeah, that was not a great draft for the Phillies to get the number one overall pick. And there really wasn't anybody else that was obvious that year. I think all of the top guys turned out to be not great picks. Was that the Nick Senzel year? Let's jump down to Nick Senzel because it might have been. And while I look up whether or not it was the same year, but Nick Senzel has been playing. Well, he's been playing. That's the most important thing, but he's also been playing well. Nick Senzel, who was indeed the second overall pick in that draft behind Mickey Moniak. That is what I thought. He missed the opening day. Well, he made the opening day roster technically for the Nationals, but he got injured in warmups for the opening day game. So I don't know whether or not that counts as making
very, very Nick Senzel of him to.
Yeah. He took a grounder off his thumb at the last possible second and had to hit the injured list for the first 10 days or a little bit more than that of the season. But he's been back and he's been playing great. He's got 15 games. He's hitting only 250, but with 5 homers, gets him up to a 916 OPS. Making hard contact, at least in terms of the barrel rate, that's all the way up to 13%. A lot of this is just 15-game hot streak, but there's the fact that he's playing on a Nationals team that doesn't have enough competition to stop him from playing. So if he finally gets, you know, a month or two of straight starts without the health getting in the way, maybe we'll finally see Nick Senzel do something. I mean, for his career, he's been so banged up and the playing time's been so irregular that he's just got an 80 WRC plus. That's not the kind of guy you normally want to get excited about at age 29. But here's a guy where I think you do go back to that past prospect pedigree because it was mostly the injuries, I think, that have just beating him down year after year. And if we can finally get just a little bit for Nick Senzel, I know after I put him on here that he's just going to get injured tomorrow. But he's not injured right now, and he's playing, and he's playing well. So go get Nick Senzel.
Yeah, wouldn't it be fitting that the Nationals kind of reap the Nick Senzel rewards that the Reds never got? And also I guess they got some from Jesse Winker, but Jesse Winker's also having kind of a rebound year with the Nationals, former Red as well. Dylan Carlson is my next recommendation. He's on a rehab assignment. He homered from the left side of the plate, which is by far his weakest side, on Thursday. Seems like he's nearing a return, maybe early next week. Tommy Edman, not close to return. I think Carlson's probably going to be the everyday center fielder. They've been playing Mike Ciani, who's been really, really good defensively, but he really just can't hit at all. Carlson really hasn't hit much at all either the last couple of years. Struggled both from a performance and injury perspective the last two seasons. Hasn't hit much since his rookie year, but still just 25. Maybe there's still something there, and I think he's going to get the at-bats. So deeper league, it's not going to cost you much of anything to find out, and I think he's going to play regularly and still a young guy, so take a shot.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, just his age 25 season feels like he has played his way out of the league practically, but that's just not at all the case. We could definitely see Dylan Carlson figure things out at this point. Let's end the show with the final guy on the list here, Wensiel Perez, who's eligible at second and outfield for the Tigers. Not a big name, not one of their bigger name prospects, but he has been playing pretty regularly in the outfield over the past week plus, and he's been showing something for sure, hitting .286 with a .946 OPS, three homers and two steals in 17 games. He's supposed to be a hit over power prospect, so those homers, I'm not sure they'll stick around. His hard hit rate's pretty low, but he's hitting a ton of fly balls, so maybe he will get more homers than you'd expect if that continues. Decent speed in the minors, too. Looks like 26 steals last year. Not a burner, not somebody who's going to do a ton in any one area, but somebody who has shown good plate discipline too throughout the minors. And this year that seems to be reflected in his early stats. He's striking out under 20% of the time with a 12.5% walk rate. So a decent player who's getting some playing time for a respectable Tigers team that's actually three games over .500. So maybe respectable is not even saying enough. Wensiel Perez at least emerging as, I think, a deep league candidate as long as he's in the lineup.
Yeah, he might be the most interesting in this budget buys section. He's shown some decent skills and certainly looks like he's going to get the opportunity to play regularly, certainly while he's hitting this well. And you know, multi-position eligible, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. So that's a guy you want in a deeper league for sure.
All right, that's going to do it for today's show. A whole bunch of call-ups this week, so we're going to have a fun bidding this weekend to be sure. Although I will say for both of us, it was hard to find enough starting pitchers to throw on there. So other than the call-ups, might be a little bit of an interesting week here pitching-wise. But good luck with everybody's pickups this weekend, and we'll be back next weekend. And I'll be back tomorrow with Ryan Bloomfield going over some players who are making some interesting skills gains this season. More from that tomorrow on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at BIOPTIMIZERS.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.